Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Seriously, if you want to relieve stress, go to the Word of God.
Oh my goodness. It's just so weird, isn't it? When people say stuff like that.
I apologize for them.
Are you kidding me?
Let's all do baptism, and I have a little pool here, and we'll all feel nice and relaxed. That's baptism. No, baptism is a sacred Christian rite. All the various yogas are sacred Hindu rites.
Wake up, America!
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Who da thunk? This is Wretched Radio. Not one to usually throw kidney punches. Tim Challies landed a blow on all of us. Question, when you're done with church, you get into the van, you're heading to the Cracker Barrel, about what do you talk? Is it possible that this article written from our fellow Tim Challies needs to land on you? The title of his article, The Danger of Being a Sermon Critic, did that land already? Is it possible that you have become a professional at critiquing your pastor's homily? It's easy to do, isn't it? It's sort of like imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. Did you catch that song being sung at the funeral of Jimmy Carter? I believe in the National Cathedral. You know, it used to be a Christian church. Now they allow people to sing Imagine by John Lennon, which begins, Imagine there's no heaven. Seriously? And Garth, they have auto-tune now when you're singing live. You could have used it. That's all I'm saying. Tim Challies landing a blow when it comes to those of us who have a tendency to critique the pastor to bits. Or the music, for that, it doesn't matter. The music, it just doesn't make any difference. Something about church that got up your nose that Sunday, and you find it very easy to simply, you're Siskel and Ebert. Wow, there's a dated reference for you. Instead of being a movie critic, you're a sermon critic. This is as tough as I've ever heard Tim Challies write, because he's such a soft-spoken guy, very pastoral. But this was kind of stingy. There are few habits that are easier to establish and few habits that are easier to foster than the habit of critiquing the Sunday sermon. It's true. I don't think any of us can say we're not guilty of that. Now, please note, there's a distinction between, hey, did you hear what the pastor said? Here's what I got out of that. Here's how I'm going to apply it. That's a good, healthy conversation. That ain't this. There are also few habits that require less skill, that demand less character, and that bring less benefit. Oh, wowza. In other words, we got to stop doing this, but it's so easy to do if you try. Though critiquing the sermon, this is Challies, is easy to do. It requires no great skill and no substantial Christian character. Oh, man, Zilla. It requires dedicated effort to prepare a sermon, but no effort to criticize one. It takes substantial skill to preach a sermon, but no skill to critique one. There is a massive disparity between what it takes to prepare and deliver a sermon and what it takes to pick one apart. 3 or 4 days of laboring over scripture and commentaries and many hours of prayerful pleading can be dismissed with a single word. This might possibly be of help to you. I heard a sermon on Sunday at Alpharetta Bible Church. It was really good. It was about Jesus making his way to Jerusalem. This is Matthew chapter 20. He is ascending to Jerusalem, probably reciting the Psalms of Ascent. That's such a cool thought, isn't it? Have you ever done that? Have you ever gone back and read the Ascent Psalms? These are the Psalms most likely memorized by most Jewish people who are being faithful to attend the festivals in Jerusalem. Jesus was faithful to that. He's headed to Jerusalem, not just for Passover, but for his own passion. Most likely, he recited those Psalms. Go read them. Your Savior uttered those as he went to his own timed death. And the last section that Matthew offers to us before we really turn a page and going into Passion Week, when we what we would call Palm Sunday, Jesus is delivering a number of messages that appear, courtesy of chapter breaks, to be rather disjointed, but they're not at all. Matthew has compiled different stories, different healings, different messages of Jesus to make one singular point. All right, hold on. I wasn't going to do this, which is why I don't have my Bible open to it. But this is something that we have a tendency to miss when we're reading the Bible, specifically the Gospels, because Matthew is not just throwing together a number of anecdotes. Well, okay, I remember that. Okay, then there was this one and he plops it here, he puts it there. No, if you take a look at the flow of a book, dismissing the chapter breaks. Now, they might deserve one, but I'll tell you, the chapter break that happens between 19 and 20 is really one of the worst, because the parable that begins in Matthew chapter 20 is actually connected to what preceded it. Peter saying, so what about our rewards? We left a rich young ruler, didn't leave everything behind, but we did. What are we going to get out of this thing? And then Jesus launches into a parable about a landowner who paid everybody the same wage, even though they worked a different number of hours. You ain't going to come up with the right interpretation of that parable if you just read it from the chapter break. What was Jesus teaching there? It's a long parable and it can be wildly abused because we have a tendency, and I get it, to find all kinds of meanings in parables. But one rule that is well worth trying to follow, although I grant you there could be secondary lessons, there's one main lesson to a parable. And it's usually showing God a right response and a wrong response. That's typically the triadic nature of parables. But this one is different. The landowner hires some guys in the morning, probably 6 a.m. to start the work of the harvest. And the detail that Matthew gives is that they negotiated. They knew the deal. Hey, we'll do this work for you. What are we going to get? You're going to get your denarius. You're going to get your penny, which is a day's labor. But then you notice when the landowner goes out to hire others, there's no negotiation. They just figure he's an honest guy. He's got integrity. He's going to do right by me. And off they go. So what is happening here? Is this about salvation? Is this about rewards? What's happening here? What's happening here is that at the end of the story, when the master goes to pay the wages, the guys at the beginning who negotiated the deal, who got paid the same as the individual who only worked for an hour, they worked 12. This dude works for an hour. Hey, how come we don't get more? What's the point? What's the point? Without understanding that Peter had just asked about the rewards of the disciples, that you can make up a lot of points if you'd like to, but the point is quit comparing yourself to others. Your heart should be right in this. These guys should have seen the master giving a wage to somebody who really hadn't earned a full day's wage. And instead of carping, they should have gone, what a master! What a great landowner! This guy is kind and benevolent! But no, that wasn't the attitude of those workers. They were jealous, they were critical, and they didn't like that they, presumably, had been treated unfairly. That was aimed at Peter and the disciples. You're going to get rewards, fellas, because you did indeed leave much behind. And Jesus says that there's going to be different rewards for different individuals. That is unmistakable. It's all throughout the New Testament that there will be degrees of rewards. There'll be a different number of crowns on everybody's head in heaven. And so we know that there are going to be different rewards. Jesus even said to Peter, you're going to get rewarded for your sacrifice for me, but watch your attitude. Be careful of the attitude. Don't be doing it for wages. Be doing it because you love the master. That's the point of that parable. And then it continues. This same subject continues because you see a request from the parent, the mother of James and John. So after this long parable takes place in Matthew chapter 20, after Jesus gives them a little bit of a tongue lashing for this, what do we see? That Jesus is now going to march up the hill and he's going to go to Jerusalem. Now, wait a second. Why is that there? Because Jesus is revealing he is the example that they are to follow. How do I know that's what that is about? Because then you get the mother of Zebedee's sons next asking, what am I? Put my boys at your left hand and right hand. And what is Jesus? Why did Matthew insert the third time that he's going to be going to Jerusalem to be crucified? Third time. Why? Because he's showing himself to be the example. This is what it looks like to be the least in the kingdom. And the one who became the leastest is also exalted the highest. That's the flow of Matthew chapter 20 and 21. Be a servant. Now our Savior is about to march to Jerusalem. And you say, what does all of this have to do with critiquing your pastor's sermon? Next on Wretched Radio.
So we know Martin Luther King Jr. as a civil rights hero, but what did he believe about the Bible, salvation, and God? You'll find out January 13th at 9 p.m. Eastern as Fortis Institute hosts a free live webinar titled The Disturbing Theology of Martin Luther King Jr. Todd Friel, Virgil Walker, and Jason Allen will explore the controversial side of MLK's faith. Why did he reject substitutionary atonement? Did his liberal Protestant roots overshadow biblical truth? And how did secular influences like Gandhi shape his views on faith and activism? Was King's theology spiritual or strategic? Did he tailor his beliefs to fit the civil rights movement at the expense of eternal truths? These are hard questions that haven't often been asked. Todd, Virgil, and Jason will tackle them live and unfiltered. Subscribe to the Wretched Fortis Institute YouTube channel and turn on notifications so you don't miss this thought-provoking webinar. Again, January 13th, 9 p.m. Eastern on the Wretched Fortis Institute YouTube channel.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus. All of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number six for preparing students for the real world. All that. Plus, the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know, here at Fortis Institute, we've got a lot going on. We've got our latest webinar coming up January 20th with Virgil Walker, where he and Todd will discuss the disturbing theology of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. That's going on January 20th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Stay tuned for more details. Also, coming up February 7th, The Better Way debuts with Libby Glosson. And trust me, ladies, you don't want to miss this. And what else is happening here at Fortis Institute? Well, we just learned that all of our brand new podcasts that began just in October of last year have come in ranked in the top 10% of all podcasts in the entire world. And that's happened only because of your support. We thank you for all of the support that you've shown us here at Fortis Institute. And if you would like to support us even further by joining us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner, well, then we would welcome you with open arms. Find out more about what that would look like in your life by logging on right now to fortisinstitute.org. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Know your reformers. William Tyndale provided the first complete translation of the New Testament into English in 1526. While he was in prison for the crime of translating the Bible, he continued to translate the Old Testament until he was strangled and burned at the stake in 1536.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Not gonna wanna, but I'm not gonna. This is Wretched Radio. Do you ever stumble on something and it's kind of impactful and then you want to share it with people? But then sometimes you don't know how to take your foot off the gas and just let it go. That's what I'm experiencing at the moment, because I'm noticing more and more and more. I'm not saying we get rid of chapter breaks and paragraph breaks in the Bible, but I'm just saying it can really cause us to not see the beauty and the tapestry of the story that is being told in the Gospels. We're preaching through Matthew at alpharettabiblechurch.org. And I'm noticing repeatedly these chapter breaks and paragraph breaks. It easily becomes kind of the pericope for the pastor. This is what I'm preaching on. All right, what's the next thing here? What's the next story? Okay, where's the next header? I guess that's my text. Oh, and we can read the Bible that way. And it can feel like bing, bing, and it's just ping-ponging all over the place. That's the song a ping-pong ball makes, by the way. Really good ping-pong balls, which if you use really good ping-pong balls, you probably call it table tennis. The point is Matthew 19 and 20, I think it's got a major point. It's got a big ba-boom. And the ba-boom is this repeated refrain throughout these two chapters. God is going to offer rewards to us, but be careful because his system of rewards, different than what you'd expect. You want to be the greatest? Become the least. You want to be the top of the heap with Frank Sinatra? You've got to become a servant. And that is what we see throughout Matthew 19 and 20, culminating with Jesus calling them to himself. You know, the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. It shall not be so among you. Boom. Whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. Whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave, just as the Son of Man. So here's our example again. This is why Jesus said, I'm going up to Jerusalem. He's our example. What does it look like to be the greatest in the kingdom? You Philippians 2. You humble yourself and you serve. And you say, very nice, Friel. Thank you for re-rehearsing your sermon. What does that have to do with Tim Challey's article, which is a real kidney punch toward those, myself included, who can become sermon critics? I think that the answer, the solution to that problem is actually in Matthew 19 and 20. If I'm supposed to be a servant, if I'm supposed to be a slave to others, if I'm supposed to put others before me, that should impact how I go to church. If I'm going to church as a consumer, which is the mindset of most evangelicals these days, I hope it's a good one today. I hope they have music I like. I hope he nails it this week. I hope he doesn't go too long. I hope that this service is better. I just hope I don't get sleepy like last week. You're going to be disappointed and you're going to get in the car and you're going to critique it to pieces. Why? Because you went to consume and you didn't go as a worshiper, offering up your service to God. Nor did you go to the church to encourage the pastor. It's pretty hard. If you make a beeline for the pastor after the sermon to go, sir, thank you so much. It's going to be really hard to get in the car and go, did you hear what he said in Matthew chapter 19, how he was talking? Because you didn't go to be pleased or amused. You went to serve man and God. It will help your attitude. And we need that attitude adjustment, don't we? This is Tim Challey's. It is better far to listen receptively than to listen critically, to search diligently for every strength while quickly overlooking every weakness. It is better far to listen as a broken person than one who is convinced he is already complete, as a hungry man than one who is convinced he is already full. It is far better to listen from a position of need than a position of self-satisfaction. Oh boy, is that why we criticize sermons? Because we don't think we needed it? Oh, oh man, Scylla, that slaps. Slapping is good now. When something slaps, that's a good thing. Jimmy, listening to your news, man, that slaps.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Where I come from, it didn't used to be a good thing. There is good to be had from any sermon when it has been preached by one of God's servants. That is the attitude that we should possess. We should go to church, not sitting on a pedestal with our pad of paper and our pen ready to just pick this bad boy apart and have at it, but to go as needy people, needing what is prepared, and to go as a servant to encourage the body. See, here's what happens when we go to church as a consumer. The song comes on or they start playing the song. You don't like that one. You know what you do? Nothing. You don't sing. But if you go to sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs for one another, you realize, I got to sing this song. I don't even like this song. The melody is a little unfamiliar. I'm just going to croak it out and do it. Why? Because people are listening and I am not here for simply consuming. I mean, we should download what is being preached. But if we're going with that mentality that says, I'm going to judge whether or not it's consumable to me, oof, we're going to sit on our hands. We're not going to worship when we're called to do that. And the sermon, it's going to become fodder for the drive home. From Challies, you may find an apple tree in the back corner of an orchard that at first glance does not appear to bear a lot of fruit, especially when compared to the trees that are in much more prominent positions. But as you reach up into that tree's high branches, you'll find some ripe fruit, and it will be every bit as sweet and every bit as nutritious as an apple from the most bountiful tree. And that apple is no worse for the extra effort it took to pick it. What's the point of the parable? You consume sermons that are masterful because you get to choose with Spotify and with Apple, and you get to listen to some guys who are magnificent orators, and that is a blessing. That is not something we should say, get rid of it, because the comparison with the local pastor is too disruptive. It's too undermining of the gratitude that we should have for our local pastors. Not saying that. But we got to be careful that we don't judge our pastor based on a guy who happens to be really, really good at it. There's still fruit there. We got to find it. And we will if we go with a servant mindset to church. This changes so much. I'm pretty sure, Jimmy, we did a YouTube video on this. We did a YouTube video about Christmas and your expectations for Christmas. I think the same thing applies here. If your expectation for Christmas is that I'm going to be made happy by the people who come, you're in trouble. But if you see the people who are coming to your home as greater than yourself, you humble yourself to serve other people, then the only reason your Christmas will be a disappointment is if you did not go about the business of serving them well. Feel the difference? Same thing with your marriage. If you're keeping score, I do more. And boy, do we see this, don't we, between men and women? Especially if the man is the predominant breadwinner. I do enough around here. I bring home the paycheck. Bad attitude, dude. And she can feel, on the other side, I do everything around here. I clean the house, I take care of the kids, I make the meals, I mow the lawn. And we can keep score, but you don't. Not if you're a servant. And when two people that are married go about the business of outvying one another for being a servant, oh, look out. That is one of the happiest homes you are ever going to experience. Why? Because that's God's kingdom economy. I tried this on Sunday morning. I think it works. I'm sure Jimmy will tell me if it doesn't. the transitive property of math. If A equals B, B equals C, then A equals C. All right, God is A. What is God? He's happy, he's content, he's joyful. What does God do? B, he serves. It's all throughout the Bible. Jesus is called servant over and over again in the book of Acts, his servant. He's prophesied as God's servant in Isaiah 52. He's the suffering servant in Isaiah 53. Jesus himself came to serve people. He's the example for that. So that's God, the supremely happy one, serves. We're C. We serve, we're going to be happy. Simple as that. And that's the motive. Rather than just a drubbing, be a servant, start doing stuff for other people. You want to be happy? You want to be really happy? Like supremely happy? Act like God. Be a servant. And the bonus is you'll stop criticizing your pastor. This is Wretched Radio.